Cosmos Science, news, magazine, podcasts, video and features.
Welcome to Cosmos Country, where our reporters talk about dealing with climate change in rural and regional Australia.
The climate system is complicated. If you do something in one place, it can have effects somewhere else.
Our first species released beyond the fence on the sanctuary was brush-tailed possum, and they've done really well, which is incredibly exciting.
Prosperity and education, they're our values, and everything that we do relates to that.
So that's an absolute game changer.
We all know satellites have been spies in the skies for decades. They expose nuclear missiles, track military movements, and guide disaster response efforts. But what about a farmer's war on weeds and bugs? Can they reveal what paddocks need what type of treatment? What about soil health? Can they tell you to open the tap another notch when covering the south side of a field and close it up again on the north? Then there's water quality, runoff, and a host of other strategically valuable information that's only really evident when you get a clear overview of what's happening around you. My fellow Cosmos Country reporter Jamie Seidel is also the Australian space industry contributor for Cosmos, and he's seen how agriculture sits high among the priorities of our nation's orbital efforts. Can you tell us a bit more about that, Jamie?
Oh, well, you only need to look at the shocking extent of flood and fire events since 2019 to see why we need to get detailed and up-to-date information about what's going on in our environment. But that climate-driven need also extends down to the level of cropping farmers and cattle grazers. They have to do more with less, often in shorter time and in more intense conditions. And that's as much a matter of balancing their own books as meeting new emission standards set by their export markets. Joining us today is Dr. Jasmine Muir, the SmartSat Cooperative Research Centre Principal Scientist in Earth Observation. Also in the hot seat is Tim Neal, Managing Director of Data Farming. He has a background in agricultural farming and is keenly aware of the need to do things smarter as the challenges to the agricultural industry grow. Dr. Muir, can you tell us a bit about Earth Observation in Australia's embryonic space industry?
Thanks, Jamie. It's fantastic to be here today with you. And Earth observation has been my passion for a number of years now. I've been working in it for about 20, so I've seen it grow over time. Earth observation is used quite widely already within Australia, particularly in government for monitoring and helping us detect change over time. Within agriculture, it's used for monitoring crops and telling us what type of crops are being produced across Australia and how much of those crops are produced. And it's also capable of helping us look back in time so we can see right back with one of the most widely used satellites to the mid-1980s. So we have a huge time series of information there that can help us make decisions and plan for the future.
Neil, what prompted you to form data farming? Clearly you saw a need.
Like Jasmine, we're veterans of the industry, been working with satellite data for 20 years. I guess data farming came about because we were frustrated that farmers weren't getting access to this information in a really simple to use format. So we set about building that 6 years ago to really drive adoption, get people accessing this data on a regular basis on their phone, essentially, and then helping them make management decisions on top of that. So that's our key driver.
As an amateur historian and a slightly older, a member of a slightly older generation, I remember growing up with stories in South Australia about the Goyder, how surveyors in the 1800s marched around the countryside, mapping the dispersion of plants, trees, soil types to roughly draw a dividing line between farm here and don't farm here. I guess this is kind of a high-tech version of that.
Yeah, and it's really about helping people manage the variability in their production. You know, when you do that, you also generally reduce costs or make farming more efficient and also impact the environmental benefits as well. So you're right. It's really back to the future a bit. And there's a lot of areas of the world that are still in development mode. So they're still going through these sort of challenges of where to farm, not to farm. And this sort of data will certainly help guide that decision-making.
So when you're talking about a farmer in the field looking at information and data on their phone, what sorts of data are we talking about there?
We gather data from both standard resolution satellites like Sentinel down to super high resolution satellite imagery. We process that in a format that is much more consumable rather than, you know, millions of megabytes of raw data. We process that into simple and easy to use type formats. And then it's very, very challenging, of course, to deliver that sort of data onto a mobile device when it's so data hungry. So we've had to work pretty hard to build out ways of actually distributing that data that's very thin, and particularly farmers are on low bandwidth. Typically, they're in rural areas, which means poor coverage. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible to access this data in the field, because ultimately what we want to do is people need to use it in the field to look around the field and see where the good areas are, where the poor areas are. So there's been a lot of work done to really change that delivery mechanism. And to the point, you know, once upon a time, it would take us nearly 2 weeks of a team of data scientists and GIS people to process satellite data and deliver it out to a customer, probably in a PDF format on an email, to the point now where the data we're gathering is captured and delivered within 2 hours. And that's a remarkable advancement in technology from the space industry. So it's tremendous to be able to get that information out in real time.
Can you tell us a bit about the other end of the scale there, about the satellites that are actually zipping over our head, what kind of sensors and cameras they use, and whether we've got enough of them to give us the kind of data we need at a 2 hour kind of notice?
We have a lot of satellites zipping around over our head at the moment that provide Earth observation images. And the type of satellites that we're seeing more and more of are high resolution. So they can provide information down to around a couple of meters, which is really applicable for monitoring wide areas at the farm scale. So that's a type of information that's really useful for being able to apply to a farm and then determine what management decisions you might want to make. We're also seeing satellites that have new types of sensors that are being launched. Today, we had one that was launched that will monitor methane emissions across the whole world. So we're starting to see these satellites go up more and more, particularly commercial application satellites, and it's just providing a wealth of information. Leading back to what Tim said, though, I think the distribution of this information is so important, because without that, people can't access it and use it for what they need to do.
There does seem to be a lot of different providers. You know, you've got national governments with their satellites. You've got commercial enterprises with their satellites. There's a lot of overlap between them, but also a lot of distinction. And of course, resolution is probably the difference between something being useful and not. So how do you go about sifting through that smorgasbord of data to get the kind of data that's useful, but at the same time affordable?
A lot of the time it will come down to access and availability. So there's free and open data that we can access quite readily, and that's used by Tim and his platform as well. Then there's the commercial satellite data, which often operates at within certain spectral wavelengths, which provides you with a smaller amount of information about what's on the ground. And then we can have something that has a lot more information about what's on the ground, and that's called hyperspectral imagery. So we have information available that can help us start to solve problems that we weren't able to solve before. That's looking at things like disease, risk and pests within the field, also productivity and biomass. So there's all sorts of data that we can get from these satellites, and it really depends on the application at hand, how we use it.
I'm located here in Gunnedah, which appeared to be the epicenter of the mouse plague that we had not that long ago. Can this sort of technology help in the early stages of that?
Mice are probably a bit more challenging, but certainly what you'd be picking up is the damage. At the moment, you know, there's a large outbreak of a new pest in Australia in our northern region, and you can certainly pick that up where it's been impacted, but it's probably a bit too late by the time you start to see mass damage. So, and going back to your point, Jamie, about the number of satellites, like it, basically the number has doubled in the last 2 years, and we've been launching satellites for 60 years. So if you get your head around that, the number has doubled. It shows that the space race is gone crazy, and it's really been driven primarily in the private sector by increased investment in that area. And companies like Elon's company that launches satellites, you know, once upon a time it would cost you know, $100 million to launch a satellite. Nowadays it costs you $70,000. You could build your own satellite for $20,000. I mean, so, you know, the accessibility has opened up, which has driven massive investment, which has driven massive launching, and not, you know, not one or two satellites at a time now, but hundreds at a time. The Chinese are launching hundreds at a time. So, you know, there's this massive increase in the number and quality. Like Jasmine said, the resolution, the hyperspectral imaging, thermal imaging, like there's just a plethora of different types of satellites being launched and in, you know, on mass now rather than once.
So there's no concern about having to wait 3 or 4 months between snapshots of your farm in order to get that kind of data you need to determine when and where to put your fertilizer, for example.
No, well, that's the thing about the cadence. You know, there's companies talking about imaging the earth every hour now. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. The volume of data and what we're going to do with it is quite astronomical. So I think we've got there's a lot of bigger other issues at play there too about where do we store all this sustainably? How do we process it sustainably? So there's lots of other questions that have come out of that, let alone what do we use it for?
You're listening to Cosmos Country. I'm Glenn Morrison, regular presenter based in Alice Springs and Bantua on Aranda Country. I fell in love with Australia's red heart in the late 90s and never left. Now I'm thrilled to help tell the stories of regional Australians as we all prepare for the challenges of climate change ahead. Going beyond the city limits to find bush innovations, clever ideas, Indigenous know-how. That's Cosmos Country.
I've seen so many of these kinds of things. You're sitting in people's hands and in labs and in test fields, and I just keep thinking, oh, wow, the potential of this. But I didn't know that you'd already got that far down the track. What's your goal? Where do you hope to be in 5 years' time? What, you know, is that in the hands of everybody who wants it? And to be so normal as to be the same as a street directory, you know, 20 years ago.
Organizations like and businesses like Tim's are so important in making that happen. At the moment, we've seen satellite imagery locked up for way too long and not accessible to the everyday person who might find a really good use case for it. So I'd personally like to see it treated more as a normal data stream that we're seeing used much more broadly, incorporated with lots of other information and financial records, sensor data to really help drive decision-making processes.
I guess the main comparison point we have is the Weather Bureau, isn't it? Where that kind of light, that kind of data at a higher level, admittedly, higher altitude at least, has been, you know, the base information has been made available to everyone for a long time. Now that you can get it right down to sort of paddock level, how do you manage that, I suppose, as a whole? I guess that's a decision for the commerce and government and farmers.
I think we also want to export to the world and still stay in Australia. I see so many businesses, you know, heading off over to the US or Europe, leaving Australia behind because there's not enough support here, not enough, a very poor R&D to commercialization and outcomes in Australia. So how can we, with SmartSat, like a CIC type approach, make sure that we keep the jobs in Australia and export to the world and bring their revenue back here instead of everyone disappearing? The brain drain, as they call it, to the likes of the United States. And it's just happening time and time again. So that's the challenge.
Bringing this back down to the ground, Dr. Muir, can you explain to us, I suppose, what kind of signals are you looking for from your satellite imagery, whether it's infrared or standard visual? How can you sift out the presence of a weed from, you know, your pea crop, for example? And are there differences in the Australian environment? So, for example, I remember listening in at a SmartSat doctoral thesis presentation where there was some talk about how we can't really monitor the health of our Australian eucalypt forests because their leaves are oriented differently to trees in the Northern Hemisphere, and that is usually a sign of, you know, an angled leaf in the Northern Hemisphere is usually a sign of a tree that's suffering, it's got poor health. But in Australia, it means the tree is just trying not to get sunburned.
If we can go back to the original part of the question, so how we differentiate a weed from the crop is they look different in the satellite imagery, and we need to have enough information in the satellite imagery to be able to see that difference. So if you think about how you see a photograph, a weed and a crop might look very green. So you can't really easily distinguish them based on color alone. But when we start to look at satellite imagery with more information, they will start to look different in portions of the visible light spectrum that we can't see with our eyes. So that's one of the advantages of using satellites, is we can see more and we can see over larger areas. And of course, then there's the spatial resolution. So we need to have enough of that weed to be able to distinguish it based on the spatial resolution of the satellite.
Is this project, I understand, is larger than Australia? Are there cross-Tasman efforts going on here through an agreement with the New Zealand Space Agency?
So SmartSat CRC is a collaborative research organisation, and we've been working with Data Farming on one of the projects that we've been doing, which is based around biosecurity for crops. We've recently signed MOU with the New Zealand Space Agency to develop a series of research projects, one of which will also include biosecurity as a topic. And so in that respect, we are working across the Tasman with the New Zealand government as well.
And also, when it comes to actually sitting in your tractor, trying to determine when to turn the tap on, when to turn the tap off, how far are we integrated with this data now, and how far in the future can you envisage us getting integrated? So, for example, a lot of our headers and reapers and machines are already hooked up to GPS systems, and they follow a pre-programmed course. Farmer gives them the various sets of instructions. But can you envisage a time where that is overlaid with a data map, where that machine will then respond appropriately depending on where it is in the field or on the farm? Or are we already there?
Oh, we're certainly not there, but that's the kind of area that we're working on. I mean, the farm size has doubled in Australia in the last 30 years. So there's a lot less people, and our machines have got bigger and bigger. So our attention to detail has diminished compared to what it was 50, 60, 70 years ago, where every farm was a 640-acre block and the farmer knew every square metre. So we need technology to help us manage those large areas. And we're seeing, agronomists are the support people for the industry. They really have very large areas to check. And so keeping tabs on things is very, very challenging. So we're embarking on some projects too to look at how can technology replace the infield checking. And that's a combination of satellite and drone-based information. So much more high definition, point localized information combined with satellites is what we're working on. So I think that it's a fusion of ground-based sensing and satellite-based sensing is where it's going to go to the point where we'll get almost completely automated farming systems in the future. But that's a long way off. I mean, robots are already hitting agriculture pretty strongly now, but there's a very long way to go. But we're one step at a time. We're learning more and more about how the system operates and how we can use sensors to enhance our activities and make it more efficient and sustainable.
Data fusion is one of the areas where we're really looking within SmartSat CRC to help develop the technology. That's the combination of satellite imagery with the ground sensors we spoke about, and also the sensors that might be on, the harvesters, and incorporating that information to tell us more about what's happening. The other area is some of the newer satellites that are being launched, and I did mention one of them earlier, so that's MethaneSat. We're really looking forward to working with that and seeing how we can help monitor methane emissions across agriculture and other industries in Australia. But really, as a CRC, our role is to help develop the research and to bring that research out into industry. So our role is really to sit in the middle and to help make those connections, and I guess see that the technology is used to its full potential as well.
How do you do that? So it's the age-old problem of boffin versus practitioner, I suppose, isn't it? And is that how you've got this working relationship with the likes of Mr. Neil and others? Do you have field trips to give you the inspiration as to, we can find out about that because we've got a camera that can sense that kind of material or that kind of plant?
We'll try to start off with the user problem that we're trying to solve. And that's where we really rely on people like Tim, who's out there talking to his clients and working with people on the ground. So he really understands the practical applications of what's needed and also what the technology could potentially contribute as well. And then we make sure that we are broadly engaged with stakeholders across the industry. So we're working with some of the largest research and development corporations, the levy-based grower industries here in Australia who fund research, and working with them on their challenges, bringing the technology side to that. The collaborations we also form are very important for this, and that's with organizations such as the European Space Agency. So we're trying to bring in that top level technology into these ground level challenges that our farmers and other people in the agribusiness are facing within Australia.
This kind of information has been available now for a couple of years at least. Can you give us maybe an example of how much difference it can make in a particular situation in your experience? Have you encountered a scenario where a region or an area or a farm has had a bit of a eureka moment with the kind of data that they've been getting simply because they didn't know to ask the right questions before or how to get the answers to the questions they'd had for years?
Yeah, I guess it's an enabling technology, right? So once they get access to it, it enables all sorts of things. And there's been a lot of those moments and, you know, hundreds of different use cases that have popped up that were unexpected. So the key thing is getting the removing the barrier to entry so that people can actually test and trial these things so they can see the value. And that's what we've been about to the point now we've got about 40% of farmers in Australia using our satellite data to help them make better decisions. And that's tremendous technology uptake and something that was, you know, only a few years ago used by less than 4% of farmers. So I think once we mix the R&D with the commercialization, that's when you get real powerhouse outcomes. And you've got to get that into people's hands in an easy-to-use format because they're just so time-poor that it can't be cumbersome. So that's the real trick about getting widespread adoption of these kind of technologies.
And do you think that tool's coming at the exact right time as we look at the climate change for the future?
Yeah, it certainly is. It's the mixture of growing more food more efficiently, but more sustainably. So the triple bottom line impact that we've talked about for a long time is probably more important than now. So it's a real, you know, real big effort to enhance all three areas.
There's so much more we can talk about when it comes to the power of data converting to results on the grounds, but once again, we're out of time. Thanks very much to my colleague, Jamie Seidel, and our special guests, Dr. Jasmine Muir and Tim Neal. We'll be keen to hear more about the on-the-ground impact of satellite intelligence in agriculture as it rolls out. Until next time, that's Cosmos Country.